Yeah. Five killers arise from graves. The within, they shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Set loose by Zeus, they clear space and time and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome to Experience Grind Podcast, the podcast about getting older and the experiences we gain from movies, games, and pop culture. I am Ryan, your host for this episode, and this week we're going to be talking about The Handmaiden, a movie from my favorite South Korean director, and honestly one of my favorite directors in general, Park Chan-wook. But before we get into the twists and turns of all of that, I would like to twist and turn your attention to my fellow hosts. Joining me tonight, we've got Sean. How's it going?
Give him the mold! Dick twist in turn. Oh, dick twist. Right in the penis.
Relevant. Fantastic. Also joining us, Brian. How are you tonight?
This was probably the best lesbian porn I watched this week. Was definitely it top five.
The best only?
Story. It might have been the only.
Damn. So equal parts of the worst one you've seen, too.
Story-wise, definitely the best one.
All right. And last and certainly not least, Kyle.
Of course, I also have a lesbian pornog joke, but lesbian pornog ranks in my top five categories, but not my top three.
Ooh. You've really thought that list out.
I mean, who among us, fellas?
Just for, in your top clarification, four? Yeah, categories.
Oh, no. That's on the Patreon. Go sign up.
Oh.
Sounds you better like leave a about note an to hour to figure out up. What my top five
I'm not saying that shit on the
are.
Patreon. This is between me and the non-existent God.
Get out of my search history, God.
He's in there. You can't get him out. His long, holy fingers.
Stop typing in meat spin. I don't want to go there.
I think that's this episode we're just not going to be able to not have a bunch of these references throughout. So
this
let's
Experience Grind brought to you by Bells and Whistles
and Blue Chew.
There you go. Hymns
that
and
could be
hers
an actual sponsor,
probably mostly hers.
Definitely a lot of hers, not as much hymns.
Man, all right, enough beating around the bush. Let's get into it.
Nice.
We are talking about The Handmaiden, which is a wild story that we're going to get into here, and we're going to spoil. So I will say there's a good chance you probably never heard of this movie. If you don't want to be spoiled, go watch it, because some of the fun is where this wild ride goes.
Do not be intimidated by the run length. I hate long movies, but
it goes like that.
I won't pull anything away here and spoil anything, but I will say it pretty consistently keeps itself fresh and... Yeah. I will say an hour and 50 minutes, pretty much on the dot. I'm like, I cannot wait for the next 40 minutes of this movie. But we'll get there.
All right.
Amazon Prime. Go check it out.
I like this light teasing of what's to come. This foreplay, if you will.
We love light teasing and foreplay.
We know it's all about the story. Tell us more.
Well, all of the before details. We get into the story, I do want to know... have you guys heard of this movie at all? Are you familiar with Park Chan-wook? That's a multi-part question, but anybody who'd like to go first?
I had never heard of this, for sure. Not even on my radar. But I mean, I do know about Old Boy. I haven't seen Old Boy, but I know about it.
Okay.
I've seen Old Boy. I've seen Lady Vengeance. I did not know of this one because I don't follow the guy's work. Like when I hear of something, then I check it out. And of course, Old Boy, but had never heard of this before you brought it to the table.
I had heard about a lot of his movies. This one I had never heard of, just kind of because I'm really I'm not on it when it comes to anything that's made for Amazon, and this was an Amazon thing.
Did not know that.
But so yeah, I didn't watch it. Well, but I definitely, you know, I added it to my grind. Although I did not grind nearly as much as people in this movie did.
I have three alternate names for this movie I'd like to get out real quick. Maybe even like subtitle movies.
Should we rank them? Or pick our favorite?
All right, you want to? You guys want to rank them?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
We can decide. All right, so here's the three that I came up with. First up.
I love top three.
The Old Lesbian Triple Cross.
Okay. Right now, on number three.
Yeah.
Already heard of it. Second one, Women Be Trifling.
Oh, I like that.
Ooh.
And the first one is, We Can't Trust These Hoes.
I feel like that applies to the men hoes as well.
We can't trust these hoes.
Yeah.
Non-genderfied hoes.
You interpret it any way you want.
She's a hoe, he's a hoe, we're all hoes. Yeah.
I like the old lesbian triple cross because it implies that like it's famous enough that it's the old.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
It's been around a while.
Yeah.
Those famous lesbians and their triple crossings.
It's the classiest of the three, but well, I kind of like the in-your-faceness of the other two.
You guys all popped on Women Be Trifling, I will say.
Yeah.
Women Be Trifling. More when I put together that trifling had try in it as well, and so I started picturing there being a hyphen between try and fling. Because then it's trifling.
All right, so that's what we're going with. Women be trifling.
Go both ways.
Hyphen fling.
Hey.
All right, those were my bit jokes.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Well, I am really glad that I was able to bring something off the radar to you guys. And also, as I mentioned in the Discord, very sorry also about this. As Sean, I think you said off camera, this is the first time like Sarah's been able to join you for one of these, and this is not what I would introduce anybody to for like a Ryan movie or anything like that.
She asked me what it was about, and I gave a quick synopsis of from what I knew, and she goes, "Who picked that?" And I was like, "Ryan," and she goes, "Oh, yeah. I don't know why I asked you." And then she then proceeded to spend the next 2.5 hours glancing over at me to see how uncomfortable I was.
What kind of movies do you guys talk about on that podcast of yours anyway?
It's porn week.
I think also, we like might Ryan, add an extra point for this one. A 0 or 1 for or discomfort. How uncomfortable were you at certain moments in this movie?
Oh man, does it get a point for each act of each this movie?
I think it's just a 1 or a 0, like binary.
Are we just is this movie it's getting like story a straight during 100 just from individual September. Ones?
If you want, honestly, it can all go.
Also,
in.
Ryan, I know you have to break down this story, but I do not envy you having to break down this story in any way that does this movie any sort of justice.
Yeah. There's a lot, and I had to really work it to get under 2 paragraphs. So it's going to go by as quick as it fucking can, because this is a dense puzzle box of a movie. But we're just going to get into the story. So I'm going to give us a little synopsis, and then we'll hop into ratings. Set in 1930s Japanese-occupied Korea, the story follows a con man, Count Fujiwara, who schemes to seduce and marry a wealthy heiress, Lady Hideko, with the goal of stealing her inheritance by having her declared insane. To execute this plan, he enlists Suki, a young Korean pickpocket, to pose as Hideko's maid, Tamako, and encourage her affection towards him. As Suki integrates into the eerie household overseen by Hideko's abusive uncle, Kozuki, she unexpectedly falls in love with Hideko, complicating the con. However, just as the plan appears to be succeeding, a stunning twist reveals Suki has been betrayed. Hideko and the Count were using her to be institutionalized in Hideko's place. Act 2. The story then shifts to Hideko's point of view, revealing the harrowing past under Kozuki's control and her true motivations. Though initially complicit in the Count scheme, Hideko secretly devises her own escape, ultimately saving Suki and turning against the men who exploited them. With mutual trust and a true bond between them, the women outwit their abusers, getting Kozuki to torture the Count in a fit of rage, and in turn getting poisoned by the Count via mercury cigarettes. Suki and Hideko reunite and flee by boat, finally free to embrace each other away from a world of domination, manipulation, and oppression. And that is The Handmaiden in roughly two paragraphs. Again, a lot of that nuance lost in that smushed.
Yeah.
You lost about 2 hours and 29 minutes of nuance, but
yeah,
that's the tale.
I mean, that's what happens just by taking out the sex scenes.
I'm not gonna. That's not gonna give any old man a boner. So.
And this movie is concerned about old man's boners.
Oh, so yes. Much.
Send Ryan to the basement.
No!
He's not a bad boy. You're going to get a penis jar.
Oh, shit.
Okay. I have talked a lot, so I'm going to pass this over to whoever thinks they have a strong opinion on story.
I have a pretty strong opinion on this story.
All right.
I completely forgot that last week you said that this was similar in something like Barbarian or From Dusk Till Dawn, where it is one of those things that just really flips the script halfway through the movie. And so when it got to the point where Suki was like, they got to the mental institution and they start taking Suki away, I'm like, what the fuck? And then it dawned on me, oh, wow, at the beginning it said part one, and also we're only 50-some-odd minutes into this movie. What the fuck? And then you sit through part two, and it got to about an hour and 35 minutes into this, and I just out loud go, oh, I know where this is going. Let's go. And then I mentioned earlier that at legit hour and 50 minutes in, when they start destroying the library, it's like an hour 50 on the nose. I was so hyped to see how this movie ended. This movie was so masterfully told in the story that every single scene is peeling back more layers of this onion. And in part two, it's kind of similar to like what I really liked about Arrested Development season 4 or whatever, where you revisit the same scenes, but from different point of views and from different perspectives. So you get to see the total picture. And I really loved what they did in there. So on that, I've got to some qualms with things that I don't think needed to be in this movie. But in terms of the story as a whole, I can't give anything less than a 5.
Wow.
Starting off strong.
Yes, yeah, I thought that was right masterful.
I mean, we've made a lot of jokes tonight. And I mean, you could very easily argue that this movie is gratuitous. I don't think gratuitous is bad, especially when you, I mean, this movie's from the guy that did Old Boy. You guys haven't seen Old Boy. If you have, this movie would make more sense. I always think of this quote from George R.R. Martin, where he talks about, I could write the most elaborate paragraph describing the visceral way an axe enters somebody's skull. But if I do the same thing about a penis entering a vagina, that's when all the letters come in. And I think it's just this association we have with sex. I mean, they are absolutely gratuitous in this movie. I mean, if we gave it a point for real on the 0 to 1, if it made me uncomfortable, I watched this movie alone, and I'm a pornog okay guy, and I was like, this is, what the fuck are we doing here? But all that aside, I'm 100% in Sean's story, or side. Movie 2.5 hours long. It clips along famously. Even as a subtitled movie where you're reading, you're engaging. It doesn't get boring. It doesn't get exhausting. It's great. I love all the twists. It's crazy that this isn't listed as a comedy, because there are some funny fucking parts in this movie, man. Mm-hmm. When she tries to kill herself and they're doing their little bit there. Fucking great.
Oh, God.
Dude.
Yeah.
So many actually hilarious comedy bits in this flick, and it's not listed in the descriptions at all. I'm with 100%, 5 out of 5, man. Really enjoyed this.
Well, now I have to hear your thoughts, Brian.
Okay. I'm with Kyle. I don't think the gratuitous sex scenes was bad. I think a lot of it served the story. It went on a little long. And most of them, they could have cut them shorter. But at the same time, I did not feel uncomfortable at any point. I am glad I watched it alone, but I was never uncomfortable. It would have maybe been different if I had been watching it with like my partner or something. But watching it alone, just hanging out on a Monday night, I think it was, just watching this movie, I was like, okay, there are worse ways I've spent my time. That said, I wish I didn't know that there was going to be a twist, because I kind of felt it coming. When the three of them went off together, I was like, okay, I know there's a twist coming. They're going to turn on Suki. And sure enough, they did. And then I was like, I feel like there's still another twist coming. And sure enough, yeah. Suki and Hideko were in cahoots the whole time. But the way they revealed all of that, and the way they showed the how many layers of, so here's what happened in this scene, and then we go back again and be like, this is what actually happened. And I feel like this is one of those movies that if you were to rewatch it, you pick up so much more in the second time going, because you know what's going to happen. And you can see the hints being laid. And I really enjoyed it, but it's only going to get a 4 from me.
Respectable. And I think for good reasons. To bounce off that, I think I can naturally kind of, not necessarily rebuff, but provide an alternate view. Because now this is my second time going back to it. Granted, it is like 9-10 years later. Wow, what a Still, I feel like this movie is transgressive now. I can't believe this came out 9 years ago or whenever.
Did you see this when it came out?
It was 2016, I believe. Mm-hmm. So about 9 years. But to bounce off what you said, in the second time, I kind of knew all of the twists and turns. And it was still engaging for a lot of small details. And it's a lot of what you said. It's the attention to details and how like the story slowly reveals certain things, which is in itself, I'm an easy sell for this kind of shit, because it's like reflective of like the characters and what they're doing too. So like that the story is like almost a con artist in itself, like mirroring and like holding and withdraw. I think that's kind of neat. There's like small details to like going to Lady Hideko and the gloves. Like, that's such a small detail, but she has gloves to keep everybody at a distance, and she only ever takes them off for Suki. Or the Count says something about, like, it's in the way the lady looks at you, how she looks up or down at the lips and then up, but she always looks back at you. And, like, every time she looks at Suki, you can notice that she's doing that. So there are these very small little details that they do pay off, I think, beautifully. And I do, as you said, I think it's one that will reward multiple visits if you are able to sit through a 2.5 hour thing like this multiple times, which I think is a big ask.
I might wait.
Not
9
unlike
years.
Sean referencing season 4 of Arrested Development.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But say all that, I really just, I like the story. I think it's a fun little kind of sexual thriller that really like plays with social dynamics, sexual dynamics, class dynamics. I think I'll talk more about some stuff. The what?
I mean, an occupied country's dynamics. These are the Koreans. Yeah. They're occupied by Japan. And so much of that is,
And we'll talk about this in the style, but how like the two languages are presented and why they use the languages in certain people. I think that's like super clever. Very and like well done. The set design, the house is being taken over by Japanese in one end. And like even the house is being colonized. And it's like, it's so fucking, it's just master level detail. And I think it's, I'm going to play my hand. There's probably not going to be many categories that aren't a five here for me. This is a five. I think the story is great. I love the puzzle box here. And the small details make rewatches, even if you know what's coming, at least for me. I enjoyed it. So,
yeah,
five for me. But now we're going to move to characters and shift gears here. And this is going to be something more interesting, I think. I think we'll get maybe a little bit more varying answers, possibly. I'm not sure. I'll go ahead and start, and I'll just be brief and just say I love the characters. I said I was gonna give a lot of fives. This is another one. I think the characters here are wonderful. I think the actors do a great job in embodying a lot of their performances and kind of the traits of the characters that clearly communicates, like, I think even just visually, the intent of the characters. I think there's a lot memorable here with the characters. But I would like to hear what other people have to say. Does anybody? Oh, Kyle.
So my one thing with like foreign film, especially foreign film so far removed, like, I wonder, do I interpret the meaning the way it's supposed to be interpreted by the performance? And on the whole, I feel with this movie, I do, because like you said, the characters all sort of kind of represent these, I don't want to say stereotypical, but like the count guy is a schmarmy, cool like character, and he plays that to a T. Like when you see him, you get what he's going for. The same with like the handmaiden Suki. How she's sort of like wide-eyed a bit. I get like really out of her element. The simple girl. They call her illiterate, and she literally is, because the whole letter that he writes to the lady is basically telling her like, oh yeah, we're totally doing this. This is the girl you're gonna fuck over. Screw her. She's dumb. Nobody Don't likes worry, her. Everybody hates her. Anyways. Yeah, she can't read this anyways. Ha ha. What an idiot. Like, and even like her performance, like, and even like her physical way of like presenting, like, kind of gives off like the commoner style. I love one of the things I just wanted to touch on, and I'll say it. I think I'm a 5-2. It's only because they are a bit stereotypical, but I think it helps with the story, so I can't hate it. I think it does benefit, so that's why I think I go 5. But I want to say the uncle, I really like how they're very obvious with like how corrupt and evil he is. Like, he has the obsession with the pen in his mouth, which makes it seem like this black evil is almost always oozing out of him, and it's just unnerving and ugly, and really represents, like, again, I don't want to say stereotype, but it, like, it's broadcasting like the archetypes of these characters. But I think it's great. So also, I'm with you. 5.
It's funny that I feel like I'm like rebuffing something that you say, because considering surprise, I'm also going to go a 5 on here. But like, I feel like even so, Uncle Kazuki, sick fuck, as he's affectionately known as, is really like the only one to me that felt really stereotypical, just from that whole the black mouth thing that he had going on. And also, can we talk about how stupid the book buyers were? He's clearly forging these things. I feel like there's so much more layers and depth to all of these characters. Sure, you've got the smarmy count, but also Ryan referenced something a couple of minutes ago where he, you know, yeah, you see her eyes, this, that. Like, he is so much of, in that world of con man, that he is that far into reading people, watching their eyes, watching what they're doing, and it added so much more depth to that character. And then you have someone like Hideko, who has been trained so hard to just be cold. If she doesn't do anything, she's getting her hands just absolutely smashed. And she just plays this, the character just plays this captive, beaten into submission. Like, there's no other alternative. She's going with it. Like, she's not even complicit in this stuff. She just doesn't have an option. I think the characters are great. And as I say in a lot of other movies, if I can't find fault in it, like, how can I really knock anything off? I don't know other South Korean actors. I don't know if there'd be better actors for this. I don't know. And I liked what they did with them. But
I was just going to say, I liked one of the things. The count early on comes in and Tsu-yi picks his pocket of his lighter and like shows off her skill. But I love, like, I think it's the fact he steals it back because he is smarter than her. He is better than her. And that's why he has picked her. And the only reason it doesn't work out is because these two fall in love and screw him over. And I think that's another great little storytelling detail. Because right there we know, like, oh, he already knows all of the... He's better than her. And it's just... It's good stuff, man.
The real con was the friends we made along the way.
Sorry, I cut you off, Brian.
No, also, it's okay. I haven't even really started yet.
This is Sean's story, too. But I love the fact that that Hideko is, like, forced to read all of these super graphic books to these old men about basically men having their way with women. And what it all boils down to is she literally has no interest in any of this. She is so that was just such a great aspect of the story.
Yeah, there is something very refreshing in the men in this movie all being very one-dimensional. But the leads, the two women, are very, they have a lot of depth to character. They're very underestimated, and they take advantage of that. And it's great. And every single character in this movie, you know their motivation, you know why they're doing what they're doing. And you naturally root for these two women. And I think just it's excellent all the way around. It's a 5 for me for characters too.
Hey. Wow. Okay. I don't know how to read a room. Fantastic.
We're all getting better at this, by the way.
I'm glad that we all like really hold our cards.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was going to be a much more contentious movie, even this far into the breaking down.
I did watch this today, so and surprised. I thought to myself, "Wow, Ryan streamed this in the Discord. Join the Discord." Sometimes you can see the movie, and
sometimes on Discord you can see titties.
Yeah, sometimes on Discord Ryan streams porn.
A lot. That would have made me even more uncomfortable to have somebody pop in and be like, "Hey, what you watch?" Don't worry about it. It's art. It's art for movie.
Not like the you see the mouse like going up to the extra. it's not me. It was
am I still connected to Discord? My bad.
Why is her mouth listening?
She just eat a donut?
Suki got glazed.
Oh, man. Wow, okay.
This is Brian, how do you feel surprising. About these characters?
5. I love them. And as I think I kind of did it real quickly, but I'd repeat what Kyle said, which is I think there is something like these actors really do just embody their characters. And the Count is such a good example. He's like the Korean George Clooney. He just has like that vibe where it just it works. And yeah, you might be able to find another actor, but this one just perfectly fits. And I think that's how, honestly, all four of the main roles are. They all just perfectly fit in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see the guy that played Kazuki playing Heihachi in a Tekken movie, because damn them eyebrows, son.
Those eyebrows. Oh, wow.
Jesus. Mm-hmm. And in some scenes when he's being especially nefarious, them bad boys, it looks like there's gel in those things. They're standing like 4 feet.
His eyebrows are their own character in this movie.
Jesus Christ. Can I give his eyebrows a 5?
There's one person in the credits dedicated to those eyebrows and maintaining them.
I hope there is, and you're not just BSing.
An eyebrow boy. Eyebrow boy was played
the
by...
The eyebrow boy.
The best eyebrow boy.
Best eyebrow boy.
That's gotta be a Korean Emmy or something.
So I think this is a perfect segue in. Talking about eyebrows and how poppin' they were is perfect. Into style. Let's talk about the style here. This will cover tone, visuals, sound, and music, all of that jazz.
It was jazz?
If listen real hard.
In the basement.
It's mostly bells, but it's jazzy.
Mm-hmm. The octopus in the basement was playing a clarinet.
Yeah, I'm conflicted on the octopus. Was the octopus supposed to be some sort of torture device, or is that where he's getting all his ink?
All right. So,
oh, that's a good call.
On my second, so probably ink too, but on the second rewatch, when she reads the book as a child, one of the sex acts involves the octopus and it lingers on that picture, and that we see her reenact all these sex acts and there's an actual octopus there. I think it goes to reason she has to do something with that octopus in front of the wealthy perverts at some point.
That is disturbing.
And it comes back to that book.
Yeah.
Later when they're destroying the books. Like, it lingers on there even harder.
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just getting you ready for the basement.
I think it's all implied. It's the implication.
There's a reason she doesn't want to go down to that basement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. It just may be the calamari.
I think it is.
Yeah, because she says that he.
I think it's also the jars of penises and vaginas.
It could be that.
Adorning all of the walls.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like a fun spot to hang out.
No, that is not a romper room. she said that he showed her what he did to her aunt. And like. It appeared while she was hanging out on the tree out there that she had all of her fingers, and it stands to reason she might be missing some stuff down there, and not octopus. I don't know how long they live, but
I think like 30 years.
Oh,
well. Mm-hmm. Baby octopus got some.
Stop. Oof.
I'm just going to Google this.
That thought. Oof.
Octopus lifespan, 3 to 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, never mind.
See, I said 35 in my head. It was the 3 to 5. Oh, I said 30. There's no way to come back.
You
want to
hear
this.
Me talk more
or is it
about
a squid? I don't know the difference.
About octopuses?
Seas?
Yeah. Is it Saint? That's plural, right? Join us on Patreon, where we're going to be Australian people running a zoo or something. Check it
zoo
out on
radio.
Friday.
The morning zoo.
Pretty good.
All right. Australian. Does anybody have any strong feelings on style?
I think this movie's gorgeous.
Ayo.
Yeah.
That feels strong. Brian,
I mean,
lead us.
The way this thing is shot is unreal. I don't even know how to... go into detail about it. It's just, it is a beautiful movie.
One of the first scenes you see is them driving along that coast, along that cliff.
Yeah.
On the way to that mansion.
Yeah.
And I was just like, holy cow, that is a beautiful shot.
And there are some really cool things they do with, like, when they're running away and they're opening up the door, and they just go to the next door and they open it, and eventually they're running through the field past the tree with the noose hanging. You don't know what the noose is doing there yet.
It's great. It's great.
It's so good. Oh, God, it's good. It's a five, damn it.
Mm-hmm. I was like, was that noose still there from the aunt? And then, well, they bring it back forward to the future.
Back forward to the future.
I'm also going to go with a five here, and I'm just going to add, like, even the touch. Wait, is this genre as well?
This includes genre. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. This is like three different genres in three different hour-long periods, because like the first hour is like this romance. It doesn't even turn into a thriller until like the last hour of the movie. Which is just crazy. And that's like halfway through act two. But a scene that I really liked was at the end of the movie, which is actually, this is the scene that I wish that the movie ended on, was they are, all three of them are on the rowboat rowing away, and it cuts to just look at Suki and Hideko, and, you know, Hideko leans her head on her and they're holding hands, and they're very clear and in focus, and it cuts back to the count, who is out of focus, and the only thing in focus is the landscape behind them where they're headed. Like, they're looking through him. He doesn't matter. It's very direct. It was very visually strong, and I wish that's where the movie ended. I thought that scene was perfect. It's a five. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Had to get gratuitous out. If this was strictly a period piece, and I was only gauging it on that, I'd probably give it a four.
That's fair.
But it is so much more than that. I'm glad neither of you mentioned one of my favorite things, and I saw it, and I did like the Leo point, and I was like, that's a cool shot. The count at one point is looking at the exorbitance of the uncle's room, where they're talking about the forgery and all that shit, and he like leans back and he's looking up at this wood paneling, and the knots in the wood turn into the clouds as it transitions, and I was like, all right, we're doing some stuff here. Okay,
this is art.
So, yeah, I mean, I think I also give it a five, just because, like, it's almost Tarantino-esque in, like, its dedication to the costuming. I feel at all times, especially when she's reading the pornog, like, every strand of hair is, like, perfectly presented into place. So they just lean hard into that. And then, dude, when she, like, is suspended on the puppet, like, in that position, like, again, like, okay, we're doing something here, like,
yeah,
the way all the hidden compartments under the floors and how they come out, and like, dude,
the whole scene where they're tearing apart the library and the red ink, it's so good.
Absolutely. 100% five out of five. Style out the, okay, I'll be not be so crass. Style out the wazoo.
I will be crass. That scene in the library where they tear up the one and it's just like the water feature under there. I was like, she's gonna take a shit in that, isn't she?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I straight up, Sarah's like, you really think she's gonna do that? I'm like, yes, she's going crazy right now. She's gonna take a dump on this.
It's a toilet. It's just a big toilet.
Exactly.
The and whole then room. She got in the water. I'm like, see? Look at her.
There she goes.
Clearly where it's
stomping
going.
Around.
Now, there is one thing we haven't touched on, and I know Ryan's going to talk about it now.
Thank you.
What about the music?
Wait, before we go to music, I had one more other thing I wanted to get that nailed on style, and I think goes back to character a bit, too. When they're fleeing, and we're seeing it the second time from the lady's point of view, and they get to the fence that is like her way to get out, but she can't get over it, and Suki is like already run off, and then she comes back, climbs back over after throwing the suitcases, sets them up as a staircase, and then helps her get over. Ah! So I was like, oh, they're so in love. She loves her so fucking much.
There's that. And then on second notice, they tease her hanging this entire time, but it's only her going over the wall that she does like a real hard drop, like she's falling. And I think it's like a symbolic like ending. Shit, I'm getting too excited and throwing my hands around. It's a symbolic like ending of like this past repressed life and starting something new with Suki. And it really, like, the second time, like, she falls in a way that's almost unnatural with how low that drop is to the ground. I'm like, that is, like, they're making you think it's, like, close to hanging herself. And it's, I think it's really clever. In a way, like, A Star Is Born is not clever. And they're just, like, big old noose by Bradley Cooper throughout the movie. And, like, oh, yeah, he kills himself. And, like, that's it. Duh.
Okay. I took it more as, like,
told me.
Oh, fuck.
When I was watching it, like,
spoiler alert.
As her just, like, finally, like, that wall was, like, the last barrier to that life. I didn't pick up on the hanging part, but just, like, her giving over even, like, her ladiness. Because as soon as she jumps the wall, then she's running and she's laughing. And she's left all that bullshit back there. And she's, like, is a new person. It's just, great stuff. I really love, though, Suki's still being a servant to her, even in that time. Like, I will help you get over this.
Ooh. Sorry, one more thing that I noticed. I loved, Kyle mentioned the costuming in this movie. Fantastic. One of the most striking pieces of costuming is right before she hits the count with all of the opium, and she's wearing that poison green and black dress.
Yes.
That was so striking and beautiful, and like, just thinking back on it, like, what beautiful touch of foreshadowing before you even see what happens.
Everything visually adds to the storytelling, and that's one example. Another one is Hideko before and after she consecrates her marriage, which we see is not actually the truth, but she's wearing like an all-white garb that then has like these red splotches throughout on the next like cut afterwards. And just like small things. This movie, so good. But Brian hinted at it, and I echo what everybody else said. Visually astounding, production's astounding, sets are astounding. Oh, it's so good. The editing's good. Ah, I love it all. The music by Jo Young-wook. Oh my god, this is an all-timer for me. I am very curious if it resonates even close for you guys, but specifically the romance theme between Suki and Hideko that really like starts swelling during like the first I think like the wedding montage where they're getting ready for the wedding, and you see like the glances between the two as like the count's there, and it's just this swelling all these swelling strings with like this staccato piano. And it's one of these things, and they bring it back enough, like it becomes like just so integral to the movie. And anytime I hear it, I get this visceral reaction, and it makes me tear up, regardless of what is on the screen. Like, I don't even think it's like through anything really happy or like really sad necessarily, but just like the music is so fucking good and just convalesces in a way that just blows my fucking mind. And like, this is, Hans Zimmer's made this happen before. A few other people make this happen. John Williams can like hit me at the right moment, and it's like I just cry because like the music is so good. Jo Young-wook here, I think, does that too. And this is a soundtrack I don't think anybody will hear or talk about, but I love it, and it's one that has stuck with me all 9 years. I frequently go back to it.
Damn.
5 out of 5. I think, actually, you know what? For style, 6.
Oh, there
it is. I think this gets the bonus. This is a 6 for me. I love everything about this.
I think I was so engrossed in the story that I hardly noticed the music. It wasn't intrusive.
Yeah, I know it wasn't really bad. Stuck out, but nothing was like, it was everything suited it. Like, it, I was like, Brian, I was just really into this, and so, like, it didn't take me out, which is a good thing. I think it perfectly suited every bit.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one, because I almost said, like, I don't want to do a disservice to what he did, and I shouldn't even have a podcast with what I'm about to say. Like, a lot of times I don't even really notice the music unless it's annoying me.
I also don't either, like, man, and I'm the music guy. Okay. And, like, it has to really stand out, because so much of it, I feel, is I've accepted it to being just part of it that's there. I like you, it has to be really exceptional and stand out. Like, maybe,
but I think it does improve my scores in a lot of different areas, because if it's something like that where I'm not cognitively thinking like, oh, that's really great music, I think it is actively making the scene that I'm watching that much better. Yeah. Because my brain's not distracted by it, and it's really just helping elevate what I'm seeing. So I think that it probably, without my knowing, elevated all of my thoughts on this movie to begin.
That's how I feel about good music too, is it subconsciously enhances every scene.
Yeah.
I think these are very fair points.
Unlike Charlie's Angels.
Unless it like beats you over the head like with a theme that absolutely commands to return, like the Superman theme, the Star Wars, like when you hear him you're like,
hell yeah,
you know, like
yeah
it's about to happen, or it's happening
there,
or it happened.
There's a repeated theme here, but for me it's like a hell yeah, they're gonna be sweet and gentle with each other. And then maybe do some
hell yeah, love.
Hell yeah, they're gonna 69. Let's go.
Yeah. They're gonna put lollipops places where the sun don't shine.
Right.
The sweet and sour.
Boom.
entertainment value. We're gonna cover enjoyability, success, and reception. I read that as repetition. That would not make sense. And reception. I think on the handy sheet we've got some numbers. Brian, I love when you go over the numbers, and I feel like you're maybe more familiar with them putting the sheet together.
Maybe yeah, a little bit.
Giving you more work. I don't know.
No, it's fine. I can talk about the numbers here. This movie has an estimated budget, and I did have to do the conversion into US dollars on this, of about $7.25 million. Really low budget, but then again, it doesn't have the bloat of the United States Hollywood production system. It released, I don't know how it was perceived in its release in South Korea. All I have are the U.S. numbers, but its opening weekend, it finished 39th in the box office, making $92,000.
Well, it was up against Boo, a Madea Halloween, and that's a tough one.
I mean, how can you compete with Boo, Madea Halloween? But it did end up making about $2 million domestically, but worldwide it made $37.8 million, which is like a 522% return on budget, which is
hell yeah,
huge.
Wow. That's wild.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten The Handmaiden 2 because of it. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you think, how much of that comes from Amazon? How does that work with something like this?
That would be a separate, that's money not included in the box office. Yeah. So they might also get a deal after it's done its run where Amazon's like,
oh, okay,
we have exclusive US streaming rights from now on and we'll pay much money now. So in addition to the 38, they might,
and
get,
we
like
get
a
to slap an Amazon
million,
Studios
like,
logo on the front
from Amazon.
Usually with these things, they want them to go to get a theatrical release because you have to do that to be eligible for awards, I think.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. At least for like the big ones. So
though they absolutely have never given Park Chan-wook his flowers in terms of awards. The Oscars just has not recognized him.
That's bullshit.
I think he's got a few nominations every once in a while, but Bong Joon-ho
send him
has
a grindy.
Had a better look.
Can we do the grindies? Let's do the grindies.
The grindies? I do like that.
I would love to do the grindies.
Let's do the grindies at the end of the year. I'm into that.
100%.
I am so hyped for some grindies.
Or maybe at the start, we'll do it after Action Movie December.
Yeah, well,
like first
the
thing
Oscars,
in January.
Yeah,
yeah.
You do it into the next year.
You have to finish the year in order to judge.
Well done, Sean. Look at you.
The grindies.
Don't look at me.
If
Ryan
this
wants
is
to give him
great,
his flowers.
Well, he has to make a movie now this year, I guess. So.
Okay.
Are we giving awards for movies that came out in the calendar year? Or are we giving awards for movies that we talked about in the podcast?
I do like that idea too.
That's about where I was at.
Like we rate everything we did for the year.
one of the categories, favorite things Kyle said. Favorite thing Sean said.
Who remembers?
Things that Ryan the worst and Chase have said.
Now, did you guys imagine if we did one only on stuff that we've watched this year and everybody only brings like 5 movies to the table that they saw that came out in 2025?
Listen, I'm just saying Burt Wonderstone deserves his flowers.
Said no one ever.
Oh, it's so good. So it looks like reception wise and box office wise this was a success. So I guess now we need to hear, what did you all think about it enjoyment wise? Did you enjoy this? Was this a good sit? It was art, but like Schindler's List, is that an entertaining 5? Is it a good sit? Was this rough?
I referenced this in a recent Patreon episode.
Good way to frame that.
I put this in like the same category as for me as like Midsommar, and that like I don't want to watch this again, but I'm glad that I did, and I loved that I did. I could have done with a few less dirty looks and judgmental looks from my dog while watching it.
Rupert's a prude.
I was gonna say Rupert can lick that harder than they can.
Well, he was judging me for being one. And I'm sitting there going like this as they're 69 for the fourth time. And I cannot wait to get the judgmental looks when I walk out there and everybody looks at me for saying 69ing like 12 times already. But, I really could have done with some of those scenes going a little bit shorter. And so with that, I'll give it a very low 5.
Oh, okay. Wow. I really
swerve. Get fucking wrecked, Ryan.
God damn. You're doing it so good. Wrecked I am. Who else wants to wreck me? I mean that in the handmaiden sense, of course.
I don't know what that means.
So like we go to bed together. There's some bells involved,
a lot of stuff, but with like glorious camera shots down.
You did tease last week that we were going to see the greatest cinematic handshake since Predator, and I have to agree,
100%.
I can't find fault in it. It's a damn good handshake.
Like
that made
everything...
me so uncomfortable that I laughed during that scene because of this.
Oh yeah.
Like everything
in front of Sarah, I was laughing.
Is ever said on this podcast, as soon as we stop for recording, I forget everything that I and you guys have just said. Mm-hmm. I had no idea there was a Predator reference made last week. I'm just watching this movie along. That scene happened. I had to rewind it 4 times so I could get a screenshot because I thought I was making this brilliant joke like, holy shit, this is like Predator. And I put it in the fucking group chat only to find out, oh, I guess Ryan referenced that last week on
top
of it.
That's why you rewound it 4 gonna times.
I wasn't going to say it. I was going to let you have it.
No, because like, all right, so also Amazon's real quick. If you try to print screen, they just, it's a black fucking,
I'm
like, what the fuck is happening? I'm not recording it. It's a picture of the screen. What the fuck?
You have to turn off your hardware acceleration.
Whatever. I just took a picture with my phone because I'm like, this is just a joke in the middle of this.
I think it helped because it made it more Cinemax-y, like staticky, like you don't get it quite right on the cable. And like,
yeah.
It felt appropriate for what you were showing.
It was an awesome fucking. God damn, it was so great.
Yeah. Yeah. Powerful.
Yeah.
Made me cry.
I'm with Sean. I feel like
you
could have cut
title
some of those
thing.
Sex scenes shorter. And I think that would have helped runtime, because even though it goes at a good clip, it is still 2 hours and 24 minutes. And that's if you don't accidentally do the director's cut, and that's 168 minutes long. Which I didn't do, but...
Didn't
I would have loved that. I didn't do it either. I should have.
Now
they
curious,
cut out
though.
The octopus scene?
Well, you know what? Maybe I don't need the director's cut.
I am curious what got cut out of that. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I disagree with Sean. I think this is one that I've seen it But I do think that there's probably value in a rewatch just to see them dropping the hints. And but I think I'll do the Ryan method and wait 9 years. I'm not in a rush to see it again, but I'm open to seeing it a second time to see how they handle the things that I clearly would have missed the first time through.
I could watch
that is why I'm giving it an enthusiastic 4.
Perfect.
I famously watched Midsommar with my mom for the second time. I think famously, I'm going to rewatch this with my mom for my second time. She will not have a good time. She will not have a good time. I will have a really good time. Yeah, entertainment value. I mean, it's fucking insane. I'm a throaty 5. I thought this movie fucking rocked. It was entertaining as hell from start to finish. Even though, like, I again, gratuitous sex scenes, they're fucking ridiculous. Almost to the point, like the fucking Predator handshake. It's funny. This movie is fucking funny. For as dark as it gets, there's some hilarious shit that goes on. There's also some really sweet stuff. There's some really fucking weird stuff.
Mm-hmm. It runs the gamut.
It really does run the gamut. I enjoyed the shit out of this movie, though. I couldn't believe it was 2 hours 20. I still didn't believe it at the end of the movie. I do agree with Sean 100%, though. It should have ended with the hand-holding on the boat, not with the introduction of Benoit Balls with one final let's go balls out nude scene. Here's how we stick these both in. But again, that'll be funny to watch with my mom. So
can we 5. Just have the Kyle cut and just like,
I mean, you can go to fucking X-Vid or anywhere else and get the Kyle scenes cut right now for free, bro.
Yeah, that's, I mean, from movies.
Sex scenes in me, that sort of thing is my bag, baby.
I'm right with Kyle. This is a 35, an absolute 35. I had such a good time, even on my second one. I think Brian and Sean are correct. Absolutely wait several years to watch it again. But, like, even on second watch, like, there's just so much to hold your attention if you're maybe bored by the story, though. Again, like, the story is pretty fresh frequently. There's like costuming to look at and get lost in, or like set design, or like the way he does like cuts, or like there's just so many things to latch onto. I feel like this is a very maximalist like kind of historical period piece kind of movie. I love what it's doing. I was entertained, and I'm very happy to hear that it was successful. That kind of surprised me. I was not aware it made its money back and then some in the box office. Usually these kind of things just kind of go out to die, but I'm very happy it did well. I think the only thing I can also add is I agree with Sean that last scene, not necessarily needed. It would have been a nice, just beautiful thing to cut with them on the boat. And I think that's kind of beautiful and perfect and kind of ends it. But they decided to go out with a bang, I guess.
Hey-o.
I have to imagine he was smirking when he put that edit in and was like, yeah, great.
That's
let's give him one more for the road.
Brian just referenced it, but that was like the most Austin Powers thing in this movie. Like, if you put up that camp, that tent, like in front of them, and they just had, you know, the silhouettes just inserting a bunch of Jenga balls into each other. Like, that's what you got without the tent.
I will have something to say, I think, in direction when it comes back to that, because there is, I think, a pushback for why it is so in your face. But again, like, I get it and I'm with you. But I can also see why they did it. And I'm like, okay, I get it. That's fine. I don't dislike the decision. But
that if you have somebody in your life that you feel comfortable watching this movie with and they haven't seen it, that it'd be fun to watch, like, with Kyle's them to mom. See their reaction.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's coming out here in July. The only issue is that my 16-year-old niece is coming with her. And I'm like,
yeah, that's
not, cannot, that. No. I'm going to figure out a way somehow, though, I think.
Kyle, set a reminder in your phone. I know you, ADHD bro. Set a reminder in your phone so when you watch it, you'll remember to bring it up on a Patreon episode so we can get that sweet mom reaction.
I will film her while she's watching a scene. And we know, I think, which scene. Yeah. Not the Benoit scene. She'll have checked out well before that. I have to get her early. I can go for director real quick.
Please.
Because I know you want to wax poetic for a while. I want to let you. I just want to say, I don't think I can give this a style without also giving. I think style and director almost always are going to go hand in hand a bit, because they have such a huge impact on where the style, especially such a director like this who just, you know, seems to control so many aspects of his artistic vision. So, I mean, out of the gate, direction is 5. But I just wanted to say so many things I loved about this, even on my first watch that I picked up, references to things. I love how the sapphire earrings keep coming back. I love how the noose the mom used keeps coming back. I love, like Brian said, when the first time we see it, they're running past it, and you're like, why is the noose in the tree? What is happening? And then that gets explained in a very great way. I love that the bells and the Benoit balls are referenced throughout, and they keep coming back. As well as, I love the blue cigarettes. They're always there. You never know what the fuck they are until they're used at the end. But you've been thinking about them the whole fucking time. Every time he opens that cigarette case, you're like, I know there's something with the blue cigarettes. What is it? It's a series of Schrodinger's guns that all have payoffs, and I really appreciated that. So,
and even 5. Deeper with the noose. Is you actually see it in the box that she takes it out of very first, and it's not even a noose, it's just a rope. So when you see her reach for that box, you're like, fuck! That's what the noose was!
Alright, I'm gonna give you two the option to go before I mouth dump a bunch of verbal diarrhea about Bartend Wook. Alright.
Moving on.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 5 and give you your platform, I think.
Dang. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I will start. Shit.
I echo what Ryan says.
Nice.
Same.
So, Kanye West is no, Park Chan-wook. I love Park Chan-wook. And I feel like I maybe did a bit of a disservice to you two specifically, because this is your only Park Chan-wook movie so far. I really like him a lot. I think he's a director, much like Quentin Tarantino, who started filmmaking as a critic. He wrote 4 movie journals, like was an avid film fan, fell in love with Hitchcock. And I think you can see a lot of Hitchcock in his work. For me, this feels like a very like X-rated Hitchcock, like what a modern Hitchcock would be doing. But I also think there's a similarity to Paul Verhoeven and what Paul Verhoeven does in like his not like big action movies like RoboCop or Starship Troopers, but in more like Benedetta,
Basic Instinct,
L, or Basic Instinct, fucking right, Basic Instinct. Yeah, this has like those kind of like very adult sexy thriller vibes where we're gonna tell like an adult story and we're gonna just assume like America be fucking cool with it, you like Bible Belt country, like it's gonna be chill, right? And it's never ever chill. And right. So I appreciate these directors who do this stuff, and I love that Park Chan-wook does this stuff. I'm going to talk more about I'm going to talk more about Park Chan-wook in a minute, but I do want to go back to why I think the ending and the balls and the chimes in the night, it's I have an issue with it maybe being too easy of an ending. I really like this symbolism, but the symbolism makes it seem like too quick of a turn, a la like La La Land or something, where it's very happy for as kind of serious and bleak as the movie got before it. Symbolically, I love the idea of them using like these tools that were used to oppress them to now like make love with each other and start anew, and like they're taking back this thing, right? They're taking back these tools of oppression. That's a great symbolic little gesture. But it's really quick, and like it kind of ignores like a lot of the trauma of like being beat with those balls for years and years and years. And it feels a little like maybe this needs to be, this is like a happy ending with an asterisk, and there needs to be some.
It's
some,
the new Avengers.
Y'all need to go to therapy after this, like, because like this is not going to be healthy down the line, and there's going to be issues because y'all moved way too quick beyond some book. Of this stuff.
They're doing the thing from the book.
Yeah. But going back to Park Chan-wook, I really think it's he's got a good sense of black humor with his topics. He is very morbid. It is about like kind of some of the most morbid human traits, whether it's like the dominating patriarchy and like the handmaiden versus like vengeance and violence and how it can like just become an obsession and consume us with like, he has three movies like that. Old Boy is like the popular one in that trilogy. Sean, what's up?
I'm gonna explode. I just made myself realize an even deeper thing on that ball thing by saying they did the thing in the book. She literally is like recreating all of this stuff on stage in front of these old pervy men, and this is the one thing that she could never recreate in mm-hmm. those books, because it's always some male dominating bullshit,
mm-hmm.
and she finally gets to recreate something from those books.
Hell yeah.
Still think it should have ended on the boat, but
no, I like that thought though. That adds to it. Yeah, it's great.
God damn.
Perfect.
It just like hit me. I'm like, I'm gonna explode unless I say this out loud.
No, I'm glad you didn't explode. In many ways. But this is bleak stuff. His filmography is very bleak for the most part. And this, even though there are moments of bleakness, I do think this is like, as Kyle said, very sweet. There's a sweetness here. I think the relationship is very fucking tender. Even though they both start off trying to fuck each other over, and then they kind of fall in love with, I think that's very cute. I love a lot of it. It's a relationship I root for. And like I said, like, even though there's an asterisk, there's a happy ending. Usually in a Park Chan-wook movie, there is no happy ending. And I mean, no happy ending. Maybe a character doesn't die, but they're going to be fucked up forever and they're not going to be happy in most of his movies. So like that, there is a happy ending. This feels honestly to me a lot like, if any of you watch Black Mirror, Black mm-hmm. Mirror is also very bleak and dark. This is the San Junipero of the Park Chan-wook movies.
Okay,
this is the little bright spot, ironically, both featuring like a lesbian couple, but it is optimistic. And like, even though there are these bleak human elements, it is optimistic. So I wax all this poetic just to give some context and like who Park Chan-wook is as a director and why like The Handmaiden stands out. But also like, no, like this is not, if you go to a Park Chan-wook movie, that's not this. It's going to be very different. And I would be curious if you enjoy something like Old Boy compared to this, because it is a much less happy time and it is a feel bad movie. If you thought this was comparable to Midsommar, his other stuff is Midsommar times 3 or 4.
I wouldn't compare it to, I'm not comparing this movie at all to Midsommar. It's just in that
the heaviness.
He watched it
tier
once.
Of I'm glad that I saw it. I enjoyed it, but I have no need to watch it again anytime in the near future.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's like it's checked off that box. I've checked that box, and we good.
That's fair.
Experienced and I can look it. I'm back better and talk for about it. Not in a rush to get back to it. Yeah.
What if? Yeah. The other Asian director that made a homosexual movie went as gratuitous with his sex scenes in Brokeback Mountain. Would it have the same reception?
I will say Ang Lee, wasn't that like also like 10 years before this too? So if this was transgressive, that was even more transgressive.
That was 2005, yeah, so 10 years before that.
As I will say, though, stripping away any of the, if you want to say, like, any of the sexuality, take out both parts of the sexuality in Brokeback Mountain and in Handmaiden, though I don't think it really can with the Handmaiden, because, like, that's all the point. I do think, like, the mystery box and, like, there are things still very engaging about the Handmaiden. I have issues with Brokeback Mountain in the storytelling, and I think some of the lifelessness of the plotting, though I think the characters and acting and ultimately like kind of the messaging is good, but I don't know. I think even if you take out the sexuality, Handmaiden just presents something a little bit more engaging narratively.
I think you can, well, I think if you take out all of the sexuality outside of like the books and stuff,
just about Brokeback,
I think this still works very well.
Sorry, I was talking over you, Sean, but I heard and agree with what you said. I'm a dick.
Well,
all is good.
So I think I long-windedly did all that to just say, yeah, of course this is going to be a five for me. I think this is Park Chan-wook, like, really doing something very different for Park Chan-wook while also keeping the style there. So it doesn't completely alienate you. And it still feels like it has his touch, his vision, while giving like a different flavor, which is nice. You like that. You don't just want the same thing over and over again from a director. Again, Tarantino, I'm looking at you. Ooh, sorry for that cheap shot, Tarantino. That said,
he's so mad right now.
He's gonna be so upset, guys. I'm sorry. Thank you, everybody, as always, for engaging this. I'm curious as to hear the collective numbers, but before that, again, just thank you for indulging me a 2.5 hour very sexual thriller. that I forgot just quite how sexual it was in the 9 years since, and probably would not do that again if that was the case.
You did give us a fair warning.
It literally got like all fives.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a recurring trend for me in any episode that's with you, whether it be a movie or like one of the music episodes, that it's not something that I would have consumed or really thought about or done on my own. So I'm very thankful to have you pushing me in the direction to see these things that I wouldn't necessarily have seen before. And while I have no intention of watching it again anytime soon, I will very gladly talk about this movie anytime with anybody.
Hell yeah.
100% agree.
Thank you.
I appreciate that attitude. Perfect. Well,
I appreciate your choices.
Do we have the total?
We do. The total score for The Handmaiden is 99.
Wow.
That is our new top score.
Okay. Who fucked that one up, Ryan?
No more bell.
I gave it a couple fours. Sorry. Ryan tried to make up for it with his six. But
I did. Did I give any four?
No.
No.
I didn't.
My intention was to
fives.
Give a four because of the six, and I failed at that. I'm sorry.
I gave 2 fours, so we evened out.
Right, my very low five was going to be a very high four, and then I felt dirty as I was saying it, so I switched real quick.
So even if we were on the low side, it still seems like it might have been like low 90s, in which case, fantastic. Again, I'm pretty sure anybody listening to this has not seen The Handmaiden. Watch it.
You should.
It's weird. It's great.
It's on Amazon.
It's art.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to, literally, I don't think there's anything in here that we didn't say that will surprise you. Dude loses a bunch of fingers, gets a drill through his hand, and almost gets his dick cut off.
Yeah.
See, now there's nothing that you won't expect going into this.
No surprises.
Hope you watched it.
It's a dark, sometimes funny, sexy. Yeah, it runs the gamut.
Guys, the amount of times that I just like chuckled and I couldn't help myself because it was my only release from the uncomfortableness, and also it's a lot of times it got to the point where I just laughed and I'm like, this is ridiculous. But like, not in a bad way. I just like, I couldn't believe that it just, there was no cut. I'm like, just cut. Can you please cut? Cut. Mm-hmm. Cut. Nope, they're rolling on their sides. This? It's a full 69. Got it. Okay.
Oh yeah. They keep, yeah, that one specifically, they just Jesus keep going. Christ.
It just keeps going.
Uh-huh. That's the one where like she mesmerized. It's literally like a scene from a porno when her face is down, her ass is up, bare ass. And then she looks up and she's, and I was like, I have seen this exact scene. I was waiting for the Brazzers logo.
Yep.
Her face is glistening.
It's great though. Again, the amount of times I laughed at this movie.
Unexpected.
All right. So obviously, all right. Here, if to add something that we've not talked about, speaking of the sex scene specifically, I don't think it's that hard to do a sexy sex scene. You just, honestly, yeah, you go to Brazzers. You go to fucking wherever and you can like get reference materials. You can do all this stuff.
Yeah.
The way Park Chan-wook shoots her getting her sharp tooth filed down.
Oh, now that was the sexiest part of the whole movie.
Right? And it's
that was the sexiest fucking... What are you doing? And I was uncomfortable when it started. And then I was like, somehow this works? Yeah. Get it?
Talking about things that reference other things, she has that fucked up tooth because she used to have to put the bells in her mouth and get whipped. Mm-hmm. That's referential.
Yeah.
It's good shit.
And she helped file it down in that prolonged eye contact and the elbow rubs.
And she was looking at her boobs in the water.
Mm-hmm. I love the quick shots, just like small little pieces of information. It's so good.
And then we find out an hour later that she invited her into the bathtub right after that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she got naked and got in.
Trailblazer.
They were already fondling.
Right.
Yeah. Anyways, nice job.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you guys giving a shot as always. But I am very curious. Kyle, you're up next week.
I am.
What are you bringing to the table?
Well, at first, like I said, I thought Sean was in between us because I'm dumb and forget how to spell sometimes, I guess. So I was going to go also with a heavy mystery somber plot. But instead of that, I'm going to mix it up. I'm going light. We're going Happy Boys. We're going to talk about my favorite Disney animated film.
Oh, what?
Film called The Emperor's New Groove.
Nice.
Wow. So,
that's what I want to get into next week, fellas. Got an all-star cast, surprisingly starring David Spade. So, that's my favorite animated one.
Sex scenes in this one.
Mm-hmm. Very gratuitous. Eartha Kitt is getting nasty.
Yo, the llama show?
The llama show? Nice.
This one has a llama, right?
I don't know. That's what I got. Oh, I don't want to talk about it forever, so...
I love
it. It's going to be a fun one.
I'm so excited to talk about that with you. I'm very excited for the listeners to hear all about that. But listeners, does a week from now sound like a little too long to wait to listen to us some more? Well, you're in for a treat. You're in good luck. You're in good hands. State Farm. You're
like not sponsored anymore.
Oh my God. Linktree/experiencegrind. You can go there, sign up on our Patreon, where you will get bonus episodes every week. This most recent one, you probably learned about Mr. Balvedere. This upcoming one, we're going to be doing some Australian thing or something. I don't know. Find out. Friday. Yeah, Friday. It'll be dropping Friday morning. Sign up also in that Linktree, our Discord. Come hang out. You might be able to see the movie or porn. I don't know.
Or game with us. We're having a game night this Friday, right?
Fuck yeah, Jackbox. Mm-hmm.
It's Jackbox night, baby. Jackbox night.
Ooh, that was a couple of nights ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, get in the Discord everybody. So you get the invite to the next one.
Yeah, they're fun, don't as hell. Miss our next Jackbox
night. And we're doing them in Discord, too, so it'll be even more fun.
Mm-hmm. It's exclusive. Yeah.
Well, I hope to see everybody in Discord. But Ryan, why don't you take us out, man?
Listeners, lovely, lovely listeners, why don't you go find royalty, try to marry her in an elaborate con, and then actually fall in love with her, decide not to, end up being the dope or Mark, and then swift flopping, betray somebody else, and then, go love her forever and be happy and stuff.
And get bailed.
I was going to say scissor yourself.
Ah!